Blog Talk Radio.
Coast Radio Show. I'm your host, Ron Fitch, and today we're going to talk about the Super Bowl and how Denver won the game. I'm going to give you a breakdown of why Denver won the game. They beat Carolina 24-10. I want to start off really with the coin toss. Carolina had jumped on teams, 31-0 against Seattle, destroying Carolina early. So they kind of had a little bit of a front runner mentality. Once they gave Denver the coin toss, in my mind, I said Denver's got to score. If they score, they're going to put a little doubt in Carolina's head. And they started out well. It was a good drive. C.J. Anderson was moving the ball. Emmanuel Sanders was catching the ball. So they moved it, got it a field goal, got up 3-0. Pin Carolina deep in their territory. And then Carolina made a pass. Jericho Cottry did make a catch. That was not ruled a catch. He bobbled the ball, then held onto the ball. The nose of the ball looked like it touched the ground, but it didn't. He had possession. He had his hand under the ball, and it should have been a catch, but it wasn't ruled a catch. And that was huge because the next play, Vaughn Miller comes flying off the edge on the left side. Cam didn't see him. He strips him in the end zone. They score. Denver's up 10-0, and now the doubt settles in because now the defense is going. And now Carolina's thinking, oh, no, here we go. We're in trouble. This could be trouble. But I give Carolina credit. They did end up with one drive down the field. And they scored for Jonathan Stewart from 1 yard out. But then the turnovers. Then both teams got turnover happy. Peyton Manning threw a couple of interceptions. I tell you what was a key. Was Norwood's punt return, where he caught the ball. One of the players, I think it was McCain, on Carolina could have tackled him. He thought it was a fair catch, let him go. And Norwood went all the way down the field to set up a field goal to make it 13-7. And that was another by Carolina. A lot of mistakes, a lot of personal foul penalties, a lot of dumb stuff. 6 false start penalties. Can't have that in a Super Bowl. And then that really sets you back. You're not on schedule, down in distance. And it gives Denver a chance to pin their ears back and really come after Cam Newton. They did. They tore Cam Newton to shreds. 7 sacks, they really got after him. And then Denver was able to get a field goal in the second half to make it 16-7. And then Carolina's driving down the field. And Cam Newton throws a pass. They're going to blame Cam Newton, but I'm not going to blame Cam Newton on this one. He throws a pass for Ted Ginn, who hasn't dropped these, and dropped the ball. See, Ted Ginn is hit or miss. He could go down the field for a long touchdown, but he could drop the ball. If you compared him in the NBA, it would be like the J.R. Smith. He could get you 30, but he could get you 0. And guys like that will get you fired. He's not a player I could trust, and in offseason, Carolina's going to have to get them some receivers. But I digress, and let me get back to the game. It's Carolina, after a Peyton Manning strip fumble, makes the score 16-10. And Cam Newton throws another pass. It didn't have to be 16-10. It could have been 16-14. But Ted Ginn drops it by the goal line. He had to settle for a field goal. And those are the type of plays that will cost you. Then there was another play that really could have helped too, where Jericho Cottry had a catch. It was 16-7. He could have made it 16-14. He drops the ball at the 2-yard line. They settled, and they didn't settle for a field goal. They missed the field goal. And that was another mistake on Carolina's fault. There was like 20 big mistakes they made. They were still in it. It was 16-7 because Denver couldn't move the ball. Carolina's defense was solid. Peyton Manning, let's face it, he crawled to the finish line. He's older. He can't do as many throws, but he did what he had to do to give Denver a chance to win. And really, they had to scale back and be conservative and run the ball, let your defense finish Carolina off. And boy, did they. After a punt deep in Carolina's territory, Cam Newton fumbles, and he doesn't really go after the ball. And they score. Denver scores, wins 24-10. And I want to talk about the press conference. Cam Newton has to do a better job. You can't come into the press conference with your hood over your head. And you can't be that salty at a press conference. That was ridiculous. And Marshall Faulk said, hey, you've never been there. If you've never been there and played, I don't want to hear that lame excuse, because Luke Kuechly was there, and he played in the game and lost. There's many a player that played the game and lost and had to sit there and answer those dumb questions. Yeah, they were dumb questions. Answer them with class and get out of there. You don't have to be all happy after the loss, but that was ridiculous. And I'm going to tell you what was the key. I thought Carolina took Denver lightly. I thought they read into their press clippings. They weren't as fired up as normal, like normal. The most fired up guy was Steph Curry when he banged the drum. He was a guy, he was ready to play. But it was a subpar performance, and the biggest goat of this game was the offensive line of the Carolina Panthers. They struggled mightily, and Denver's pass rush was fantastic. And Denver's secondary with Talib, who did some dumb plays, but he's a good corner, and their secondary did a good job on Carolina. Okay, we have two guests. I have Defender Stars, Joe Covino, and I have a special guest, the Shark, Kenneth Gant, of the two-time Super Bowl-winning Dallas Cowboys. How are you guys doing today?
We're doing great, man. How are you, sir?
What's up?
Well, I want to ask you first, Kenneth. You played in the Super Bowl, and you won two Super Bowls. When you saw Carolina, it didn't look like they were as fired up. I think they took Denver lightly. Subconsciously, I think they took Denver lightly. What do you think?
I think they had a great game plan. I just didn't think they really anticipated the rush, the markets, where that we know very well in Dallas. You know, him being healthy, he's one of the best in the league. And
yes.
The other guy, he's just a freak. And you should have had some game plans. I've seen sometimes the running back went over to chip him, but he jumped back inside like they didn't want to block him. It's like, I didn't, you know, if it's going to be it's going to be a responsibility, it's not going to be mine. So, because
Joe Corvino, give me your breakdown of this entire game.
I was a little shocked, to be honest. I thought Carolina's defense was going to hold them in the game, and their offense was just too much. But like my boy Kenny Gant just said, they didn't anticipate Denver's rush. I mean, I worked with D-Ware for 5-6 years, and we're real close. And I wish him the best. And I'm so proud and so happy. But I just didn't think they had the dogs to stop Carolina's offense. I thought Cam was going to step up and just tear him up. But, you know, you never know what inexperience does when that rush is coming and the decision is going to make
them fast. That pass rush was sick. And it was sick all playoffs. It was fantastic. Compare Denver's defense, which was fast, to your Cowboys' defense, which is kind of similar, because they kind of got after. They were number one in the league, too, which nobody understood, because they talked about Irvin, Aikman, and Emmitt. But they had the speed, too, and you were safety on that team. So you saw how fast they were. Did they compare to what Denver did? Because you guys were fast, and you had a bunch of linemen. You rotated with Jimmy.
We had at least seven that can do what two guys were doing last night. And not to take away from they D tackles, everything was almost identical. All the blitzing and stuff, that stuff we didn't do a whole lot of. We looked like we was blitzing, but we were so fast we can look, and they knew we were fast, so we can just look like we was blitzing, then back out, and it just disrupted their whole offense. So they were similar, Wade Phillips did an awesome job. Had prepared a guy that's been out of football for a couple of years. When you got some athletes like that and everybody's healthy, you can play a base defense and it's going to be hard to stop them.
Now, before I get down memory lane with you, Kenneth, I want to ask Joe, in this Super Bowl, were you happy for Wade Phillips because he didn't do as good as the head coach was as
no.
the coordinator? He's been outstanding. So how do you feel about him getting this championship ring?
I really wasn't a fan of Wade Phillips as a Cowboy head coach. To be honest, from what I saw and what I heard, and maybe it worked. Maybe it worked this time, but he's a very – hands-off coach. He doesn't practice hard. He doesn't he believes in having your players fresh and healthy, where I'm more of a Jimmy Johnson type of guy where you're working to death.
Yeah.
Hopefully that, you know, that works. But I was never a big Wade Phillips guy. I mean, I'm happy for DeMarcus. He obviously has a big love affair with Wade and talks about nonstop. And you know, I guess anybody who's been in this game 30 years, you got to respect. He hung around and teams want him, and when he is out of football and he gets a call, it just proves something. Listen, in the 90s, I wasn't a fan of Ernie Zampezi and this guy, and all of a sudden they would leave and someone else would pick him up. And eventually you say, well, they must have a football mind because somebody always wants them, and they always seem to land on their feet and succeed somewhere. So
yeah,
you got to respect what he does.
True.
Well, now I'm going to get into the Cowboys of the 90s and North Turner, who is kind of the same as Wade Phillips, who just found the perfect job with Emmitt Irvin and Aikman. But, Kenneth, I want to go down memory lane. The Super Bowl, you're in Los Angeles. I hope you didn't party that week because we are in Hollywood. How are you feeling right before the game? Well, did you have nerves? What did you think?
Well, I had just actually met the King of Pop. I was on a natural high all week because I had just met Michael Jackson on Tuesday.
Wow.
For the first time. And at 23, 24 years old in California, I was hanging out with all the stars. And at that time, I love my little fuzzy drink. And so actually just before the game, I'm talking about I was up to 4 in the morning the night before, and I said, man, all the guys that was out, it was few guys that didn't go out like we did, but we had a party team, of course. But I just thought we was going to get crushed. But that's a testament to the coaches of our preparedness back then, because we were prepared. We just – and Jimmy Johnson didn't hold any punches. He speaks stuff with his mouth. And we just believed it, and we was going to play hard for him because we know if we didn't play hard, see, a lot of guys thought we had a lot of talent. But what teams are forgetting, a lot of us were scared to lose our job. So we played to the highest level of our capability, and Jimmy knew how to bring that out.
And I'm going to tell you something. You had character, too, because – that game didn't start well. Block, punt, Buffalo going up 7-0, kind of like what Carolina went through. But you had to, unlike Carolina, you had the character to come storming back, taking the lead, and taking over the game. And you described that after you were down 7-0. Was there no panic? What happened after that?
It wasn't a panic because you got the athletes. We've done this all year, and I can still remember some games we was down, even during the regular season. And I still remember the first things Jimmy Johnson told us when we landed in L.A. And we had our first meeting. You know, we had to get acclimated to the security and where not to go, and you shouldn't do this. And then he said these famous words. He said, guys, I ain't like you've been here before.
Nah.
And that stuck with us, and we just had to play like we've been here the last 3 times like Buffalo has been there. So that's how we played, like we had already been there before.
Oh, okay. Now another question I want to ask you is, you were the, all year long, you were the energizer as far as special teams, and you can't discount special teams in this kind of game because you saw what Norwood did on a punt return, and you were the guy, you were the leader in tackles. Describe how important special teams is, that people don't pay attention, but they're game-changing plays that happen in Super Bowls over special teams.
Yes, and I got guys like Michael Irvin and Emmitt Smith, or Troy Aikman, Ken Norton Jr., Charles Haley. I'm a kill everybody's nostalgia about who was the starters on the football team. I was a starter every game because you can't start a game without a kickoff or a kickoff return. Mm-hmm. So I actually was a starter. So,
I remember the shark dance. I remember it.
So
yeah, I remember that. And then you now think about this: you win the Super Bowl over Buffalo. So the following year, and during the all off season, you're a celebrity now. Now you're not just a shark; you're the shark that plays for the Super Bowl champion Cowboys. What kind of reception you got when you were different stores or different restaurants or bars or whatever? How did they treat you after that?
I was treated very well. I'm still a guy of I help so many homeless people down here in the Florida area and trying to get back to Dallas to do some of that. So in my little young heart, it would always feel, I felt like I always cheated somebody because they always, it's a family of four over there, and I got all this money in my pocket, but I get my meal free, and that family of four have to pay all their money. So it was mixed emotions for me, but it was very lovely welcome because it lets me know the Cowboy fans are the best Cowboy fans in the world because it was like we didn't have to do anything. It's like we showed up and things just happened. Food was paid for, cars detailed, you know, but we had our favorite guys. You know, I never changed barbers the whole time I was there. Saved the camper.
Okay.
It was a loyal to everybody in it. The fans was loyal to us, and we just want to be loyal to the fans. And
I want to talk about your offensive line. There's one guy, and Joe will hook me up with interviews, and that's good. There's one guy I don't think I want to interview because I'm very scared of, and that's Eric Williams. I'm still scared of him.
Oh. Well, he's had two hip replacements, so he probably got the advantage right now.
I saw the NFL story on the line. Now, I want your opinion of this NFL documentary that happened a month ago. It was the Dallas Cowboys-San Francisco 49er rivalry, and part two dealt with you guys. How intense was that?
Very intense. Some guy used to watch Jerry Rice. It was just an awesome time to play against this guy and to see Kevin Smith and the defensive backs almost take him out of his game when they came to Dallas after going to our second Super Bowl. We almost got him thrown out of the football game because we had gotten up under his skin so much. You know, the stuff we was doing back then, of course, it's illegal now. We'll be thrown out of the game. But we were doing some of the stuff, but it was just not magnified as it is now. Of course, I've had my midsection grabbed on the piles. I've had been kicked. I've been poked in the eyes. You just get up and try to go knock somebody else out, you know. So, but now the rules have changed so much that those rivalries right there, you look forward to it. We hope we play San Francisco. That was our mentality. You know, we.
I know you look forward to playing San Francisco with Jimmy Johnson.
Yeah.
We will win. Put it in big, bold letters. And you guys, how did you feel when he said that? Did you guys feel any pressure, or are you guys like, okay, let's do it?
This is it, man. It was a different high. You know, a young kid that grew up a preacher's kid, man, I just was confidence to me because, this, you know, my coach put it out there like that. We got to go out here and do it because we really believe whatever he said. And he was the truth, man. I missed him. It was very a guy that gave me an opportunity out of Albany State University in Georgia, a guy that gave me an opportunity and welcomed my actions and excitement. Then he just it was just eruptively ended. That was a big blow to me, as coming from a young kid. That's the only coach I knew that gave me an opportunity when a lot of coaches said, we don't want to take a chance on this guy. He don't know how to handle this big stage.
Now, you know, let me ask you this. Should more special team stars get in the Hall of Fame? I just seem like a lot of great, great players are overlooked. And when the Hall of Fame,
yeah,
they have the names and stuff, they don't. Because you had a great year, 7-year career where,
yeah,
you were a star of special teams every year. So you,
right,
you're more of an expert on that. You could tell me.
Well, it depends. The kickers, those kickers put in, it takes a lot of nerve to be a kicker. Punters placing those punts in different areas and not get it out of hands of the top returners. You got some returners that can, you know, the Deion Sanders, the Devin Hester, the Eric Metcalf back in the days. I think they should set aside some areas for special teams. I wouldn't put myself in the Hall of Fame because I still honor some of the guys, you know, even the Steve Tasker. Those guys, they just put the work in. I put the work in, but I still had a more big role in the defense as a nickel backer. So I really didn't really focus on special teams, but I just was excited to get on the field. So I just wanted to make things happen the time I had to get on the field. So, but in the back of my mind, sometimes I just kind of, I did hard work, but I still was thinking, man, I got to go back on defense. So I better, you know, I don't want to get hurt because I want to play nickelback. I want to do this, you know, because I'm more, I didn't know, everybody was important. And I thought they needed me more on defense as well as special teams.
I totally agree with you. Now, Joe, I want to ask you about the current Cowboys, and I'm going to ask Kenneth too. What do you think need in this draft or free agency?
I'd really be excited if we can pick up a nice stud running back. You know, last year after we lost to Marco, I mean, I was excited. I wanted to get Gurley or Gordon. Obviously, Gordon wouldn't have worked as well, but Gurley would have been a nice fit. So this year, we've had very good success with Herschel Walker and Tony Dorsett, so why not go Heisman running back? That's what I would love to see. Big bruiser, 240-pound running back who can move.
Yes.
Okay. Kenneth, what do you think about that, and what do you think the Cowboys need?
I love Tony Romo. I believe they need to start looking toward the future because any given play, this could happen. No, I take nothing from him. I would love to play with Tony Romo. I think they need to get a quarter because Denver, if Peyton Manning says he calls it quits, which I anticipate, Osweiler, they're not going to miss a beat.
Mm-mm.
And I think the Cowboys need to set themselves up to be in a game if this happens and to stay in a game and win. And I think quarterback is a big issue. But one thing I noticed all year that I think that is missing, which I would love to see those guys. I don't know them personally, a lot of them, but I just don't believe sometimes the way they play, they don't have that family atmosphere where these guys hang out with each other's kids, go to the kids' parties, go to the kids' basketball games. We were a close team. If one guy got in trouble, except for a couple of times, it was about six or seven of us. Who all was there? You know, eight guys raised their hand. You know, it was we had a family atmosphere, and Jimmy taught that, just keep everybody together. And if one falls, eight of us, nine of us are going to fall, and we're going to lie for the next one. So, and I just think if you don't trust the guy next to you, away from the house, you ain't going to trust him on the field.
Well, listen, Joe and Kenneth, hey. I got to let you guys go. Next year, we're going to get on a bigger stage, and we're working on a couple deals. But I would love to have you guys on as a guest to break down the NFL because I love Joe.
Oh.
Joe, I always read his Facebook posts. The guy knows football. So well, I really
Joe,
would love to have you guys back on.
Well, Joe is very instrumental in keeping me around football. So I thank you, Joe, publicly, man, and publicly. I just love you, brother.
No problem. And I want to say this before we close.
Okay, listen, take care, guys.
All right, buddy.
Okay. Okay.
That was Kenneth Gant and Joe Corvino. Those guys were great guests. I, you know, going back with the Cam Newton press conference, as an African-American, I was proud to see him play. He played well. I'm not one of those critics. I didn't mind the dapping and the celebrating. That didn't bother me as much. But the press conference did, because there's a certain decorum and there's a certain way you have to carry yourself. You just got the MVP award. You're a quarterback. So you're the leader. You're the face of the franchise. You have to go up there and take those questions. They were dumb questions, too. They were just peppered with dumb questions. So I get the anger. I get his frustration. But you got to man up. And Peyton Manning lost a bunch of Super Bowls. He asked them questions. He manned up and answered the questions. So I'm not an excuse guy. When I do a radio show and I hear people making excuses or whatever, players make excuses for other players, that doesn't fly with me. So I hold you accountable. I hold myself accountable for different things. I hold athletes accountable, whether it's teams I like or dislike. And there's a certain way you do things, and I'm old-fashioned with him. And he's young, so he'll probably mature. Deion, I heard Deion talk. He was right on the point. Deion will probably talk with him. They're cool. Say, listen, next time, just change up. And I think, because he's grown. But, you know, I got to call him out when he makes mistakes like that. And I did, and then, you know, maybe one day if they get receivers, he could get back and they could play. You never know. For here on out, I'm doing the NCAA tournament shows on Monday. The NBA, I watched Golden State against OKC. They toyed with OKC. They could have really laid a licker on them. That's dangerous, though. Now, Golden State's going to have to play through hard every night because teams are going to be gunning for them. But they toyed with OKC. That is, you know, if they wanted to, they could have really put a licker on them. And then they turned it up when the game got tied. Curry and Draymond Green. So it's going to be very interesting to see the NCAA, how that's going to go down, because nobody's a favorite. And hopefully when you're near conference tournament, I'll get a grasp of who's who. But until then,